We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
And we're about to be joined by the chief baseball officer of the Boston Red Sox, Chaim Bloom, who's making his way in here. And ready to answer the hardball questions that I am going to deliver this morning. By the way, what do I have, 20 years on you? How old? What are you, 30? What are you?
I'm 36.
36. Yeah. 53. So, I mean, I got to, I'm, you know, I'm wiser and older. But, I mean.
No, I don't doubt that.
you're older.
Well, so how you feeling being here with this organization here in beautiful Fort Myers?
You know, you may not believe me when I say this, but it's been great.
It's been great so far?
It really has. It's a great organization.
You didn't think about turning around and driving down the road here when you arrived?
No, you know what? I was joking to people. I just got to remember to go to Fort Myers instead of Port Charlotte.
Yeah.
But there was so much going on still on Monday morning when I drove down here. That, you know, I was so locked in on all these other things flying through my head that I missed the Port Charlotte exit anyway. And by the time I realized it, well, I thought I might as well, you know, go to Fort Myers now.
But you must have imagined what you would be focused on at the beginning of the start of this job differently than what it has ended up being.
That's fair to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is fair to say.
Well, I'll get some of the tough questions out of the way, then we can go. Or do you want easy first?
It's up to you. Easy first has not been the way that this job has gone so far.
Right. So you're used to it.
Yeah. So when it comes to kind of Major League Baseball and what's coming from them, may or may not be coming from them from a discipline point of view, have you had the opportunity to kind of get in deep to the organization and try to discover things that you may need to know that may or may not have gone on here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for the most part, obviously, you know, I certainly when you get in an organization, you want to understand everything you can about it. But as far as the investigation, I think Major League Baseball obviously has the ability to do that on a much larger scale than we do. And that's exactly what they're doing. And our job is really just to fully cooperate with what they're doing. You know, we've been doing that, and you know, it obviously is there, and it's kind of looming over the organization in a sense. But on a day-to-day level, I don't think it's interfered that much with a lot of the things we're trying to do.
Is there a feeling with you or with ownership that, you know, depending on how this goes, that there may be an opportunity to get Alex Cora back here?
You know, it's funny. I've heard that a lot. I've heard that a little bit over the last couple of days, but that hasn't even been a thought. You know, that's been out there, but no, that's not a consideration. And you know, obviously, you know what the decision that we made with Alex, that was really as a result of the 2017 report, and obviously everything there is still there. So, you know, I don't see how, you know, anything that's going on with our organization would change that.
I noticed you removed all trash barrels from the park. Is that a preemptive thing that you guys have?
You just got to take all the extra precautions as you can. You know, you got to build the culture, send the right message. You know,
you can't find a trash barrel in the place.
Yeah, anywhere. You know, it's gone. Gonzo. Right.
So coming from Tampa, where a lot of the innovations, it seems, that you brought to the team and then the game were largely based out of, I'm guessing, financial necessity because you were operating with a smaller payroll, so you couldn't afford lavish stars and bigger contracts. Will a lot of the same styles and innovations you brought there apply here to working with the Red Sox, or are you going to have to sort of like adjust your philosophies and principles?
You know, I think they can. I mean, I think the restrictions that we worked under with the Rays, I think, forced us to be more creative. But what we've seen, I think, over the last 5-10 years in the game, which is honestly, it's the scariest thing for small market clubs, is when large market clubs take those principles and apply them. we weren't really going over there looking to define ourselves by our limitations. We had those limitations. It forced us to be more creative. But at the end of the day, we were just trying to win as many games as we could with what we had. And every team should be trying to do that. So if there is something, you know, when the players take the field, there's no dollar signs, right?
Right.
It's just a game of baseball. So if there's something that can help you win a game in a smaller market, it should be able to help you win a game in a larger market. I think the difference here, obviously, is that, you know, when you are doing things right, you have more resources, you have more options, you should be able to create more options to help you win. But a lot of the things that with the Rays have helped, you know, over the years to eke out those extra 2, 3, 4 games over the course of the season that could be the difference between making the postseason and not, there's no reason why any club can't find their way to similar innovations regardless of the market size.
I think a lot of fans were frustrated yesterday seeing Mookie in that Dodgers uniform. Do you feel like you did everything that you could do as soon as you got this job to find a way to keep him?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I said it and meant it that it would have, you know, it's something that we really would have liked to have done. But, you know, at the end of the day, when you look at, you know, our job at the end of the day is, you know, hopefully, you know, for a long, long time, is we have to win as much as we can. And that isn't just a 2020 thing. That applies in 2021 and 22 and beyond, and hopefully for the next 5, 10 years and even beyond that. And, you know, in order to do that, you need to really use your resources well. You need to maximize everything you have. And when you look around the game, it doesn't matter what market size you're in, what your resources are. If you don't have a sustainable talent base at all levels of the organization, not just on your major league roster, but in your farm system, you know, guys that you can grow with, waves of talent coming through. If you don't have that, eventually it catches up to you, regardless of how much money you have. So that has to be a priority also. And so we have to weigh all those considerations. You know, obviously it's tough. I know it's tough, you know, and I know this may sound hollow coming from me. I get that because I'm new here, but I know what it feels like to be really attached to a player. And then to see that player wearing another uniform, I fully understand that. And it's not that we as an organization don't feel that as well. We just, you know, our job at the end of the day is to say what path for us do we think is going to allow us to win the most over the next 5 to 10 years? And this, we thought, fit into that.
So you guys do feel and understand the frustration of fans.
100%.
Yeah.
Yes, I would feel it too. And, you know, again, in the organization, Mookie means so much to people in the organization. You know, and especially within baseball operations, I think it is a credit to the focus of the baseball ops department that people who have those very strong ties to him and those very strong emotions.
Do you feel like he had those same ties?
I do.
Do you feel like Mookie in his heart wanted to stay here? Or do you feel like he really preferred to have the opportunity to test the free agent market?
Well, I don't want to speculate what his feelings are. It's not really appropriate for me to do that. But everything that I heard about him, everything that I got from him in the conversations we had, I believe, you know, everything he says that he loves it here. And
David,
you know,
Price, not so much.
You know, I think David, it was more obvious there were some ups and downs. And I know David, but I also think, you know, I said it, you know, when we announced the trade, at the end of the day, when it mattered the most, he put this team on his back, and that will always be the case. And he's always got that. And he is, I mean, I've known him for a long time. He is one of the greatest competitors I've ever known. It doesn't shock me that when he had that opportunity in that moment, just like he did for the Rays in 2008 against this club, he rose to the occasion.
You do any online gaming with him? I mean, you can still keep that going.
No online gaming.
You're not a
Maybe
Fortnite.
My kids get older, if they start doing it, I might have to do it just to, you know, stay in their lives, but we're not there yet.
What does he have time to do any online games?
Yeah.
He's got kids, he's helping run a multi-billion-dollar baseball team. Come on. But is there first I wanted to ask, were you at all able to enter into the negotiations with Mookie, or had they gone down a road to a point where there really wasn't much you could do by the time you got to the Sox?
Well, you know, I would never want to get into details of negotiations with him or any player. What I would say is this, you know, when you have a star player who's getting close to free agency, you know it's going to take a really significant commitment to retain that player.
Right.
And, you know, those commitments obviously have upsides that are both obviously performance upside and also emotional and, you know, cultural upside for the team, for the fan base. They also have risks, and you have to assess that within the context of where your organization is at, what the rest of your talent base looks like, and how you think it's going to fit into, again, using everything we've got to win as much as we can over the long haul. So I think all those things factor in
sure.
to that kind of decision.
And then it's got to be a little frustrating, though, to a certain degree, to see contracts getting the size that they are, like what Rendon got with the Angels, you know, the deal last year that Bryce got in Philadelphia, versus like what you were able to do in Tampa, because you got somebody like Blake Snell to agree to a deal that I think a lot of us thought at the time was well below what he may have been able to get if he were to make it to market. A 5-year, $50 million deal for a top-line starter is seen by all accounts to be an absolute steal. And I just didn't seem like you see that anymore. How'd you pull that off?
Well, the context is a little different. Because with Blake, you know, he was still a year shy of arbitration. So really the only, you know, that those contracts that get signed early in players' careers are really more, I think, kind of risk sharing between the club and the player, where the player is willing to trade off a little bit of upside for some security. And with Blake, he was giving up control over one free agent year, but still had the ability to go out and hit the market at a young age. So for him, you know, I don't want to speculate what was everything that was in his mind, although, you know, we did talk about it. But, you know, a player still a year away from arbitration, you know, he has a chance to achieve some real major financial security for him and his family and still delay his free agency by only a year. You know, that was a trade-off that made sense for him, and obviously the dollars made sense, you know, for us over there at the time. So I think it's a little bit different from free agent contracts. Look, you know, in this game, you know, the great players deserve to be compensated well.
Sure.
And when they hit free agency, they have the right to whatever their value is, and they have the right to determine where they want to play. So I think the context is a little different in those early career extensions.
Yep.
Report this morning that Chris Sale has the walking pneumonia.
Yeah.
Yay. Yeah.
Add that to your list of things.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's funny. I can't remember exactly what day it was that I found out. And you know, Brad Pearson sends a text that says, Chris Sale has pneumonia. And I'm like, of course he does. This is what else is going to happen?
I don't know if you know, but it's going to rain frogs and locusts later.
Yeah, the plagues are coming.
Exactly. And so you got what do you do? You just help him get better and wait for him, right?
Basically, I mean, you guys know Chris, and you know how much he wants to be out there, and so he took a baseball home with him, and he's thrown at his house. But there's only so much he can do, so it is going to slow him down a little bit, which is a shame because he's been doing great physically in every other respect. So obviously, when he is able to get back to the ballpark, and we're hoping to see him back here tomorrow, we'll see where he's at. Make sure we're, you know, getting him back in the swing of things appropriately. It's a bummer because just from a scheduling standpoint, it does slow him down. But, you know, it's something that obviously will pass.
The chief baseball officer of the Boston Red Sox, Chaim Bloom, is our guest. So without Price, how do you approach kind of this pitching staff?
Yeah, it's certainly a hole that we'll need to fill. You know, we did spend the winter trying to acquire a lot of different, you know, depth options that we think have upside for us that we're going to get a look at this spring. A lot of different guys that could fill in and give us innings. And we're going to continue, you know, we want to make sure to look at them and get our arms around what they can do, see how that shakes out in addition to the guys that were already on hand. And we're going to continue to look around, you know, the game of baseball to see if we can add to this pitching staff.
Now, and when you hired Ron, you announced that he was officially the interim manager. Yesterday, 2 days ago, I believe. Were stability and familiarity key contributors to announcing Ron as manager?
It was energy.
It was energy. Yeah, that certainly played into it, but it wasn't the only factor. You know, I said this at the press conference when we, you know, found ourselves in this situation, you know, as a result of the Astros investigation where we were with Alex. Of course, you know, we step back and we take a look at, okay, you know, what do we want? You know, to do with this opening. And there was, as you guys know, a lengthy process and a lot of due diligence in that process, both on Ron and on other candidates. And for me, it was especially important because I'm new to the organization, and I was able to pick up some things about Ron from the people that have worked with him. But, you know, I also called around to a lot of people that I know in baseball. And of course, Ron's had a very long and distinguished coaching and managerial career, and I was able to pick a lot of different brains, and I had people whom I know well, who I trust, unsolicited reach out to me. So it painted this picture that I already kind of had by the time we sat down for a real formal interview with him. Then everything kind of fit together. The stability, the familiarity certainly helps. I mean, that's so important. And also knowing that he does not have to come in here and earn the respect of our clubhouse. He already has that respect. But then you find out who he is as a person, you know, his demeanor, the things he believes in baseball-wise, the feel he has for the game. It was a really flattering picture that, you know, people around the game will paint of Ron Renicki. And then talking to him for a number of hours, as we did when we interviewed him, made me even more impressed.
You don't strike me as somebody who makes impulse purchases or just like you know what, I'm just going to hire Renicki today because why not, right?
Sounds good.
Pretty thorough.
Usually try not to. I mean, sometimes timetables dictate different things. You know, sometimes, like, if you go to the supermarket when you're hungry, then you end up making a lot of impulse purchases.
You get Bobby Valentine.
Yeah.
Come on, that's not fair, Greg.
Wow.
Welcome to Boston, my man.
Well, were you worried about Boston? I mean, you know, there's some players, there's some managers who can handle it. Were you worried at all about the pressure from the media or the demands from the fans?
Maybe I should have been, but I was actually just excited about them. I think, look, and I'm not just saying this like it's something special about me compared to a lot of other people who do what I do. We're competitors, and we want to win and succeed so badly, and we take what we do so seriously that it would be very hard for somebody else to add more pressure than I think we all put on ourselves to excel. So just the fact that people care so much is awesome. Like, you know, this is a tiring business. The last month, believe me, has been very tiring.
Are you like a Belichick in at 5, out at midnight guy? Or
usually at 5. If I'm not asleep, I'm trying to fall back asleep at 5. No, I'm not. The past month, and really the past 4 months for me, have been a little atypical. You know, my family's still in Florida. I've been spending most of the time in Boston, so I've probably been living a more unhealthy lifestyle than I hope I will live when we get the family up. In this game, you're kind of always on, but I also think, especially now with the means we have to communicate with each other, phones, you know, what have you, it's much easier to allow people personal freedom when they have to be. It's something with their family. It's important, you know, for all of our staff to have, you know, real lives. I think it's going to make them better at their jobs if they can get some perspective. So you got to try to model that for them.
You've been around Major League Baseball a long time. You know, you're only 36. When you look at sign stealing in general, it seems to me to be something that everybody's trying to do. You know, what were you guys doing in Tampa? Where do you end up looking at what happened with when technology gets involved? How bad is this? There are some who say, you know, what's the big deal? It's like technology filtering into something that's already being done.
Yeah, a lot of the technology that's coming in the game, there's no question about it. It kind of created a monster a little bit. And I think the important thing is you got to play within the rules. I mean, it's pretty simple. Look, there's things that people have been doing since the game started on the field to try to get an advantage that takes some ability, but they're still within the rules. And when you play the game of baseball, you have to, you know, make sure you're protecting yourselves against those things. But if something goes outside of the rules, that's not acceptable. It shouldn't be acceptable. And, you know, I know that now there's this topic, and, you know, the commissioner said that he's going to explore, you know, different considerations around the use of video. Whatever the rules end up being, we have to play within the rules. It's really simple.
And do you feel like the Red Sox were playing within the rules here?
Well, just because of the investigation, I don't want to say. I don't have any reason to think that anything
you must have
asked went on.
You must have asked the question when you got here.
You know, so you always, again, what I will say is I don't have any reason to think anything went on. But again, I'm careful what I say just because I do want to respect the investigation.
Yeah.
And you know, I think we have to respect it. But I will say this, two things on this topic. One, I think when you were competing against other clubs, you were always wondering, what are they doing? It's natural to wonder that when you're competing against people.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that you're paranoid. Sometimes there are things going on, as we saw.
Were you wondering it about the Astros when you were...
There was so much out there on them that it was impossible not to wonder.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, as has kind of come into the news, it was an undercurrent, you know, within the game that stuff was going on there.
Yeah.
But you also try, you know, you try to put it out of your mind. The last thing you want is for your players to feel that when they're playing, because it's just going to make them play worse. They're not going to be free and easy. At the end of the day, it's not something they can control. And, you know, every team, regardless of what they may or may not be doing, even the Astros, they're beatable. Every team is beatable. This is baseball, and you got to put that stuff out of your head and just go play.
I'm going to let Mr. Baseball back in Boston ask a question. Ken, I know you're chomping at the bit.
Well, I wanted one more Mookie question, if I could. The question is, when you went into the offseason, did you expect to get a deal that was going to make trading Mookie worth it? What were your expectations of the market, and then how was the market?
Good question. I actually did not, and, you know, I said, and I think I said multiple times throughout the course of the offseason, that I expected that he would be here. And I guess for anybody, that should be your default expectation. But we, in our minds, were setting a really high bar. It wasn't, you know, a situation where we were going to shop him. We basically, you know, and I felt it was really important coming in here that, you know we have this task to make this roster more sustainable but still competitive. If we're going to do that, we're going to have to be creative. We're going to have to look at a lot of different options. There's nothing we should rule out of hand. So we were certainly going to be open on him as we would be with anybody. But I didn't necessarily expect, you know, just knowing this is he's such a great player, so important to the franchise, that somebody was going to meet that bar. And, you know, obviously everybody can come to their own judgments as to whether, you know, what we got you know, did meet that bar, but in our minds, you know, we felt it was something we needed to do.
You addressed this in your opening press conference down here, but I want to ask again. A lot of talk about kind of the character issues with regard to Verdugo. Are you confident that you guys have done enough research on him and feel comfortable with him as a player, as an individual?
Yeah, we wouldn't have acquired him if we didn't, you know, feel that way. And, you know, every player, especially young players, they all need different types of support systems. You know, they all, you know, mature to some degree as they go along. And it's on us, you know, to make sure we understand everything we can about that player. Obviously, there are instances where you might learn something about a player that you just think is disqualifying, where you don't want to acquire that player. That certainly was not the case with Alex. But with any player, you come in saying, okay, how can we best support this player? And that means something different for everybody. But we as an organization need to make sure that we're putting our arms around him, that we're putting him in the best position to succeed, that we're helping him, that we're giving him support, that we're giving him tough love when he needs it, whatever it may be. But I think we're really well equipped to do that as an organization.
On the subject of players that you got in return for Mookie, so fans can become a bit more familiar with them. One, Connor Wong, would you say that he's kind of cut from that Blake Swihart cloth, but could play the outfield because he's played the infield before. A lot of versatility, can catch. And two, do you think Jeter Downs may make the opening day roster, or do you think he's going to be ticketed for the minors?
Yeah, so I'll take those two questions in the order you asked them.
So
with Connor, I think that there are a couple guys, and actually the Dodgers have one in Austin Barnes, who is a similar mold where, you know, Barnes was actually an outfielder that converted to catcher, but you know, now plays the infield. But, you know, Connor was an infielder, still does play some infield. And a lot of good catchers came from other positions. It's a really tough position to fill, as we all know. And a lot of catchers are converted infielders or, you know, more often infielders than outfielders. And it requires, you know, usually the guys that do well back there, just because most catchers don't run very fast, people think they're not athletic, but the good catchers are really good athletes. They have to be back there.
And sometimes make great managers.
Indeed, yes. Yeah. And so it takes a good combination of, you know, athleticism and makeup and brains. And, you know, he could be that sort of a player. He's always had a good head on his shoulders, always had a good offensive approach. He started to hit for more power, and he is a good athlete. He's still, you know, even as he was catching with the Dodgers, he would still play second and third on occasion, and that just demonstrates the type of athlete he is.
Red Sox CBO Chaim Bloom is our guest this morning here in Fort Myers. What does Verdugo wearing 12 say about Brock Holt? This came up earlier this morning.
You know, it's actually funny. To show you how little that says about Brock Holt, I never did in my old job, and generally don't hear, try to get involved in uniform numbers. And I think sometimes it was funny. I was having a conversation with, you know, Tommy, our clubhouse guy, about it was noticed, and I didn't get to your question about Jeter, but Jeter was put in between, I can't remember who it was, two of our veterans.
Right.
And people said, well, usually, you know, the non-roster guys are at the far end of the clubhouse, and he's in between two veterans. What are they saying? I mean, it was like, it was just the only open locker we had.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I the number stuff, I don't, you know, get involved in.
Yeah, but that says nothing about Brock Holt.
No, nobody should read anything into that at all.
And you can go ahead and answer the Jeter question.
And do you think that he'll be with the opening day team or perhaps down
the track? That seems too aggressive to me. Just he finished the year, you know, he got to Double A at the end of the year and obviously performed really, really well there. But it still was just a relatively small taste of Double A. So I think it's fair to say he needs a good bit more seasoning in the minor leagues. But I mean, what an impressive season. And you know, you never like to put limits on players, but I also, this is one of the things that was very important to me when, you know, I was involved in player development with the Rays is as much as you can, you don't want to rush guys. There's no shortcuts in this game. And usually if you try to take them, it ends up getting you on the back end. So you want to make sure you do it right.
And short and third are already manned by some pretty awesome
guys. Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
But the main thing is we got to do what's right for Jeter Downs, what's going to make him the best big league player. And, you know, we got to make sure we're not trying to shortcut that.
How often do you interact with John Henry or this ownership group, or is it mostly Sam Kennedy?
Well, you know, Sam is obviously around the office on a daily basis. You know, John and Tom generally are not, but there is a lot of interaction, you know, whether by email, text, phone. It varies depending on what's going on. Obviously, those guys have many different things that go on in their
day. Is there like a special phone, like the bat phone when John Henry is like when he's calling from the yacht or something?
As far as I know, it's just a regular
it's
cell
just
phone.
A regular, just
I don't know.
A regular
I've
cell
never
phone.
Asked him. It seems like just
I don't know
a regular
if like a big
cell
alarm
phone.
Goes off or something when he's calling in to the. There's nothing like that. No.
And I don't even. I don't have special ringtones or anything like that. Maybe I should. I don't know, but I don't.
Are you? How are you adjusting to Massachusetts life? I mean, I guess it's similar to Philly. You know, people are kind of focused on what they have to do. May not be offering a hello or extended courtesy.
You know what? That was what I was used to. I mean, you guys know Philly. It's not exactly people aren't exactly walking down the street giving each other hugs.
Right.
It was when I moved to Florida that I was looking around and saying, "Why is everybody being so nice?"
So weird. Yeah.
So it's honestly like I had to kind of readjust a little bit to New England winter, but I think I'm more or less there. And
we don't have to grease our light poles down if we win
right.
a Super Bowl. Here.
Right. So if you want to ask me, you know, how if I was worried about, you know, Red Sox fans, again, maybe I should be, but just remember I come from Philly.
Right.
Yeah.
Are you an Eagles fan?
You know, I grew up one, but over time, and you know, honestly, my friends back home would probably, you know, I don't think I've even admitted this to them, but over time, it just sort of diminished to where I became more neutral. And I'll be honest, with the Rays in 08 when we were playing the Phillies in the World Series, the experience of being surrounded by all those fans, really there's this sort of scar on my feeling about all Philly sports. So I'm sort of, as it comes to football, you know, kind of open-minded at the moment. My father-in-law, my wife's from the Boston area. She's from Lexington, and my father-in-law is an enormous Pats fan, which is actually helpful because it gives me kind of a window into the psyche of the New England sports fan just through talking to him.
I mean, when you start to get down on all the things that you have to deal with in this job, it could be about signing Tom Brady or not signing Tom Brady. Like think about if you had to get if you had to try to get that done.
Yeah, but so, you know, I sort of live the ups and downs of the Pats through him because it really does affect his mood. You know, he watches every game in the same place with the same three guys and has for decades.
So, Chaim, we're big on food on this show, and I use the term big quite literally. And I know that you are a devout follower of Judaism, and there's a story about a jar of gefilte fish that you had purchased sometime around Passover in 06, and you kept it in your office in Tampa Bay, and you had said you would eat it if the Rays ever won the World Series.
Well, so I didn't say I would eat it. It works over there that I was unfamiliar with it.
Okay.
And I found when I started my baseball career, sometimes depending on who it is, you might be the first, you know, observant Jew that they've met. And
right.
So you have some things to explain and people are very curious. And, you know, so during Passover, I was eating gefilte fish, which is disgusting, by the way.
Yeah, it's gross.
But you do it.
I was eating this and I had a jar of it just in the office, an unopened jar. And he said, "What is that?" So I explained to him and he said, "That sounds awful." I said, "It is awful." But so he said, "You know what? If we win the World Series, I will eat that jar." So
okay.
It's actually my former colleague.
Interesting.
I'm not going to name him on, you know, on the radio, but he promised to eat it.
So now did the jar make the trip to Boston?
Right now, no, but it will.
Okay. And then have we set a new standard for consumption?
So yeah. I this is something, you know, you're talking about like the video replay stuff.
Right.
I don't know if the commissioner has time to make a ruling on this. We might have to ask him about that. But I actually think the way I view it, I think it kind of gives me more options because, you know, in the unfortunate event, should the Rays win the World Series, I could still make him eat it.
Right.
We'll at least have that going for us.
Yeah. Which is good.
And,
but you
know,
can start over here.
If we win, I might also be able to make him eat it. So now I got more ways to make this guy eat this 12-year-old jar.
You might want to start with if we go 500.
ye of little faith.
What?
He's here.
Greg. Greg.
First of all, I think I have a little more optimism than you do. But second,
thank you.
That should not be the bar
for
opening
a World Series or bust.
Come on.
It's got to be.
This is a championship city.
That's on you.
That's
But you think, I mean, Nathan Eovaldi was on the show yesterday talking about how he thinks that this team could be better than we think it could be. I mean, you feel that same way?
I do. And part of what makes me feel that way is obviously, but prior to coming here as an opponent, we kept very close tabs on the Red Sox. And we felt that the Red Sox in 2019 were a lot better than their record. And just a lot of things didn't go their way. Now, there's some reasons for that. Some of it was just the way the ball bounces. You know, and just like the year before, everything seemed to go right. Sometimes you have one of those years where things seem to go wrong. And some of them were things that we tried to address, like depth. You know, with the Rays, that was something we placed a premium on. And I think you look at, you know, Yankees, Rays, Red Sox in the American League East last year, and those teams finished. They all had a ton of injuries. They finished in the order of how their depth stepped up. The Yankees obviously got incredible seasons out of guys like Talkman and Urshela and goes on and on and on. And with the Rays, we were very proud of what a lot of our, you know, depth, both guys that we had acquired from outside the organization, players from within the farm system, how they stepped up. And with the Red Sox, it was lacking a little bit. So we've tried to address that over the course of the winter. But mainly, I think that, you know, even after this trade, the true talent level in that room downstairs is a lot better than 84 wins last year. So, you know, and I know.
Even with the subtractions.
Yeah, even with that.
Okay.
Obviously, that pulls it a little closer. But, you know, even with those subtractions, I think it's a more talented team than 84 wins. Obviously, that doesn't guarantee anything. You guys have seen it over the years. You've seen teams that were built to win the World Series, finish last, and you've seen a team that got written off actually win the World Series. There is a lot of crazy stuff can happen over 162, but you know, my faith in that the talent level of this team is not just based on being a member of the Red Sox. It was something that I felt as an opponent, you know, even before I got here, that, you know, even looking at it at the end of the 2019 season, before I had any idea that I was going to be in this job, I thought, you know what, that's still a good team. They just had a bad year, but that's a good team.
All right. Well, maybe we'll make a bet when it comes to the fish. I mean, we can
tell you what, make the playoffs. I'll chug a jar of gefilte fish.
All right.
You heard it here first.
You heard it here first.
You are on the record.
And if they don't, you're taking us all to a deli. Have you found a good? Have you found a good deli up here?
No, there have been times in Boston where there have been like days on it, because I've been, you know, staying pretty close to the ballpark. We haven't really moved yet. Where I've had like a week where I haven't even left like a 2-block radius of Fenway Park. It's like I said, it's not the greatest way to live. So eventually, I'm gonna get out and. Boston's
a great
city and a really good food city, and mm-hmm. I got to learn about that.
You got to hit Michael's Deli in Brookline.
Yeah, okay.
Ask for Steven.
Go to Michael's. Right.
Ask
down.
Tremendous.
Yeah,
okay.
Right
yep.
down the
right.
street from the ballpark. Okay. All right, Chaim. Well, listen, thanks for joining
Thank
us.
You.
Thanks for having me
Pretty
on.
Good. I mean, a few hard balls, but
yeah.
I mean,
yeah. you did well.
It wasn't bad, right? I
mean, it's probably the last time you guys are friendly but tough. I will say that.
Friendly but tough. All right, that's fine. All right, that's good.
Good energy.
Or maybe it's tough but friendly. I don't know.
Kind of like Greg's steak last night.
All right, we got to take a break, but we will be back from Fort Myers.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.